pretty interesting story. We lost our security guy, big dude, and he was also our cook. Well, he couldn't cook, and he was a horrible security because he was scared of the jungle. So after about a month, he just quit. And now we're 13 dudes in a compound in the jungle, and we're trying to fend for ourselves, make a TV show, mine gold, and then we got to cook and take care of the kitchen. So I called my wife and I said, hey, babe, we're in trouble. And we were so happy when she showed up. I mean, just making a bacon cheeseburger that wasn't burnt to a biscuit was like, woo, we got, she made ice cubes for us. And anyway, it was pretty sweet. But, it was the hardest place I've ever mined.
Welcome back, everybody, to the ConExpo ConEgg podcast. I am your host, as always, Taylor White. Today with me, I have somebody who I know 99% of our viewers definitely grew up watching. I know I did myself as well, too. He has a show out now, America's Backyard Gold. It's out. Make sure to go watch that. I'm super pumped to talk. I have Mr. Dave Turin in today. Dave, thanks for being in here today.
Thanks for having me, Taylor. Appreciate it. It's kind of funny. You don't really realize how long this show's been on. Gold Rush is going on, I think it's 14 or 15 years. So I get a lot of, younger guys in the business and stuff, and they're like, I grew up watching you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you think about it, 14 years ago, 10-year-olds are now 24. And so it's pretty interesting that they known me and watched me that many years. It's pretty crazy to think. And sometimes I think, you think about all the shows that we've watched through the years and how TV shows and entertainment changes. It's unbelievable how long these gold shows, Gold Rush, I did Dave Turin's Lost Mine and now America's Backyard Gold, and how long they've sustained and people still watch them. Crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. And I think it really resonated with me. I was mentioning before we started here, I have a construction company as well, too. Family ran business. And I mean, growing up, me and my father, that was just what we watched is you get Gold Rush and then, Dave Turin's Lost Mine. And it's pretty wild how you can see, the retention of the viewers over the years, and they've followed those shows over the years as well, too, which is super interesting. But I mean, to have the opportunity to chat with you is something I'm very excited about, too. I would love to know. I was reading online, you have a civil engineering background as well, too. Is that correct? Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a degree in civil engineering.
Wow.
Went to college and, we started paving roads and building roads when I was like 12. I have three brothers and it was a family business. And that's kind of the way we grew up. We just grew up working. Our summers were just long hours and we just worked our tails off. I was always intrigued with engineering. I always loved, science and the earth and stuff like that. It took me a while to graduate with my degree. I had three kids. My wife is a nurse and it was kind of like life, but I just did not want to quit school because I put all that time and effort into it. So it was kind of like, it was personal to me. I wanted to finish. And then when I finally finished, I started looking for a job, civil engineering, and it was kind of funny. My wife asked me, she goes, what's a civil engineer do? And I said, well, we design things. We'll probably sit at a desk, design bridges or buildings or foundations or water systems. She goes, you'll be sitting at a desk? I said, yeah. She goes, I don't think you can sit at a desk all day long and design something. And it kind of stuck with me. And it was interesting also at that point in our business life. Right. So I've got three brothers and my dad and my mom. And at that point, I kind of realized that our business wasn't big enough to support three or four or five families at what I wanted to do. And so I was looking for work as a civil engineer. But then the rock quarry that we had an asphalt plant set up in came up for sale. It actually went to bankruptcy. And we worked with court. We bought it out of bankruptcy. And anyway, that was the start of my mining career, which was 40 years ago or so. that's how I started mining.
Wow, that's impressive. So that's how you got your start into mining. Was it like limestone rock?
It's basalt. So we would drill and shoot basalt. We crushed. We did all kinds of specialty stuff. I was always the guy looking out. I had more of a vision to improve, to expand our business. And the rest of the family didn't. My dad was a visionary. He would want to expand. And so we looked at a lot of different options. We looked at buying quarries, other companies. And I mean, I got into looking at the railroad rock and stuff. Everything just kept kind of, you know, for whatever reason, we didn't expand to the rate that I wanted. So I was in the quarrying and road building business for 30 some years in the same business, same quarry. Every morning I'd get up, go do, you know, it's the same mountain that we were taking down. And like I said, I love challenges. I love doing something new that really challenges you and makes you, you know, learn. And I felt like after 30 some years in the same place, I thought I was a pretty good miner, but yet I wanted to branch off from that. And it was about that time that I met Todd Hoffman, and he was going to go gold mining with his two boys, his best friend and his dad. And Todd reached out to me kind of like, hey, would you look at my equipment? Would you help me out? And he knew that I was in that business. So I started helping him out. You know, we helped him with pumps. You know, I showed him around screening and crushing, and we wired up his first generator. And as I was helping him along the way, kept telling me, he goes, yeah, I think I'm going to do a TV show. And I was like, you betcha, pal. Everybody wants to do a TV show. And I thought it was a pretty dumb idea. You know, I was in the business and I thought, this is boring. Who wants to watch a bunch of dudes mine? It seemed really, anyway, a little bit later, he calls me up and he goes, hey, would you come help us load up? We're headed to Alaska. And I said, sure, I'll come down and help you load up. And I show up and they've got cameras and producers and sound people. And I was like, oh my goodness, he pulled it off. He's got a TV show. So that was the start of the show. And I thought it was kind of cool because we're going to Alaska. Going to Alaska, there's gold and there's TV. So I thought, give it a try. I thought it would be a one season flop because it was boring. You know, who wants to watch dudes run equipment and mine? Well, here we are 15 years later, and you're still watching dudes mine and run equipment. So I was wrong.
Yeah, it turns out a lot of people do.
Yeah, I know it.
That's wild. I mean, to go from, so was it a family business? Did your dad have the business, and then it was your three brothers and you guys?
Yeah. Yeah. Dad started it. Dad was a school teacher and a coach, gosh, in the 70s. And then he just decided that he didn't like the way education was going. And so he just decided to start a paving company. And then we went from a paving company, we bought an asphalt plant, then we bought the rock quarry, on and on and on. You know, we were a good sized company, but yeah, now I'm out of it and just kicking around doing some TV stuff. And I really like the pursuit of gold because you can never conquer it. It's kind of like something that you'll never, ever, I don't believe I'll ever become an expert at it. I always learn new stuff. Everywhere you go, there's new challenges and new issues that you have to deal with. You probably experienced that.
100%. And every day is different. You're constantly learning. And much like yourself, I'm kind of outward facing from the business as well, too, as far as vision. Where do we want to go? We actually just got a sand pit. We use a lot of sand out where we are. So now we have that and we're expanding, cutting open a 15-acre chunk right now of land to get what's beneath the ground. So in a way, we kind of got our own little sand rush going on in Ottawa. So I can share that love for, you know, what you're kind of talking about, the family business stuff. But I think it's so unique. You know, you mentioned you met Todd Hoffman, and then, you know, all of a sudden there's cameras and you're in Alaska. How did you guys meet? Were you guys in the same town or did you know of them? And it was like, hey, what's up?
That's a good question. Not many people really know. Todd knew who I was. He knew that we had the rock quarry. And the real story is me and my wife had three children. And they all graduated from college at the same time. So my son got his doctor. He's an optometrist. My daughter got her master's degree in finance. And my youngest daughter got her degree in education. all the same summer. And so she got a degree, bachelor's degree in education. So we're like, we should throw a party, you know, a family party, and just say congratulations to the kids. And we knew that the Hoffmans, they owned a lodge down by the river, and they had an airport. And this lodge, they had rented it out at times, you know, and it holds 100 people or so. So we decided, well, let's go check it out and see if we could rent it to have this party for the kids. So we show up and we're talking to Todd's mother, Georgia, and Todd's sitting on the couch. And after we get done talking, Todd goes, hey, you're that guy that has a rock quarry, aren't you? And I go, yeah, I am. We knew each other, and he went to the same church, lives in the same town. And we introduced each other, and he goes, hey, he goes, I'm going to Alaska gold mine. And he goes, follow me. He goes, I want to show you my equipment. And I looked at his equipment. He bought a lot of it from an auction. And he had an old beat up screen, and I was like, that's pretty rough. And I was kind of quizzing him. I'm like, how are you going to set it up? And anyway, that's how we met, was at his lodge. And he's like, hey, you're that guy up there, aren't you? We struck up a friendship and a relationship.
Yeah, that's crazy how it kind of happens. It's such a small world. And like, I always, you know, wonder that when I'm looking at something, like, how did those people meet? Like, how did that connection happen? So that's pretty crazy that that's kind of like the course of how it happens. I think that's what's really cool about business and, you know, construction and stuff is like, you never know the next person that you're going to meet and like where that next opportunity is. People always ask, well, you know, Aaron Witt from Build Witt. I was on his podcast, you know, yesterday chatting. He's like, what do you like most about your job? And I'm like, I just like that every day there could be just a different opportunity. Like, you just don't know what's going to happen next. So I think that's what's really neat. I think that's essentially what happened with you with like the gold. So you got to Alaska, you did this first year mining, you know, forget the filming, but you're mining, you're up there, you leave your family behind to be like, hey, I'm going to go up here and mine gold. What was it about the love of gold? Like what was so different versus, you know, you're with your family mining rock and then now you're mining gold. Like, I mean, I think I can understand why it's so like, you know, great, but explain that kind of passion, I guess, and like where that came from.
It's kind of a funny thing, Taylor. We get comfortable in what we're doing. And I was comfortable. I was confined to that rock pit, you know, and I just felt like after 30 years, I could train a monkey to do my job. And it wasn't challenging. And then when Todd came, they were good guys, but they didn't really know how to move dirt. They didn't know, you know, the ins and outs of moving dirt. Now, I could move dirt. I knew how to move it around and crush and screen and wash rock. But when I got up there, I'll never forget, Todd brought me up to Yukon Territory, right? And it's the first time we're outside of Dawson City. We're on Quartz Creek, and it's season two. Season one, I was three episodes, and I just was there to kind of help him out. So the second season, we get some good ground in the Yukon Territory. And we're walking out. It's the beginning of the season, and the cameras are on us. And Todd looks out there. He goes, all right, Dave, we've got, I don't remember what it was. We've got 500 acres here. He looks at me and he goes, you're the expert. And he walks off. He turns and walks away. And now I'm standing there and the cameras are still on. And in my brain, I'm thinking to myself, Kern, this is the dumbest thing you've ever done. You have no idea how to get this gold out of the ground. I can dig the dirt, but I don't even really know where the gold is. And I think that was one of the keys to success of Gold Rush, was that I didn't claim to be an expert, but I was bound and determined to figure it out. And so as I learned and our crew learned and we learned along the way, the audience learned with us. I wasn't a guy that stood there and go, all right, this is what we're doing today. I stood there and went, we're going to try to figure this out together. And the audience came along and we taught the audience things like permafrost. We taught them about bedrock. We taught them about sluices and washing rocks. And they learned along the way. It's unbelievable to me the amount of people that come up to me and they'll say something like, hey, did you know that in season two you did this, or in season three you said this? And he goes, and now I'm out in a stream panning and stuff. So it's pretty fun, the amount of people that have watched and know kind of what's going on. But that was me. I mean, I love a challenge. I'll take it on and see where we go with it. And that's kind of what we did. And the audience came along on that, you know, that journey that
that ride, and it was quite a ride.
Yeah. So it's kind of like you were hooked, you know, and I like what you were saying, you know, about, you know, that's just like your personality. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but we got to make it work. And I think you're right with like bringing the audience along, because, you know, you were teaching them about sluicing and getting down to the pay dirt, what the pay dirt is, what it looks like. And I think that that's such an organic, you couldn't pay somebody enough money to try and act that out. You know, it's just like, right. we're genuinely learning, and the audience is learning with us like that. It's the TV show kind of struck gold. But I do want to touch on when I said, you know, like you moved up to Alaska and stuff, mining gold and moving up there generally. I mean, you said you have three kids. How does that kind of dynamic work when you're like, hey, I'm going up mining for gold and I'll see you in 4 or 5 months or whatever the timeline is?
It came at a perfect time for my wife and I. So, you know, our three kids all out of college.
Yeah.
And it was just perfect timing. If my kids were young, I don't think I would have done it. We had to do some soul searching in order to take kids up. We tried, you know, in those first years with our crew, we tried to make our camp very children friendly. Our wives came along, you know, for the first 4 or 5 years, it was a family friendly camp. And so we had a lot of kids running around. We had the wives there. My wife came along. My wife typically travels with me more than half the time. People don't realize that my wife like ran the kitchen camp for years. My wife went to Guyana with us when we were in the jungle.
No way.
Yeah, we lost our pretty interesting story. We lost our security guy, big dude, and he was also our cook. Well, he couldn't cook, and he was a horrible security because he was scared of the jungle. So after about a month, he just quit. I think we were 13 dudes in a compound in the jungle, and we're trying to fend for ourselves, make a TV show, mine gold, and then we got to cook and take care of the kitchen. So I called my wife, and I said, hey, babe, we're in trouble. We don't have anybody to cook. And she was like, well, I got the grandkids for a little bit of time. And she goes, after the grandkids go back home, I'll be down. And sure enough, she was there for about close to 2 months. And she cooked for us. And we were so happy when she showed up. I mean, just making a bacon cheeseburger that wasn't burnt to a biscuit was like, woo, we got, you know, she made ice cubes for us. And anyway, it was pretty sweet. But, you know, it was the hardest place I've ever mined. I mean, it was nuts. And to take my wife there, she's a trooper, man. She's as tough as any person that I've ever met. She came down there and did it.
Yeah. I think the key to what you're saying is, you know, having good support at home really kind of makes it. That's wild to hear that. I didn't actually know that. That's pretty crazy. I mean, and you're right with it being kind of the right time. I can relate in the opposite direction of, I have a 2.5-year-old and an 8-month-old boy and girl. My biggest debates at home are, what time are you going to be home? When are you going to be home? Oh, it's Saturday and you got to leave and you got to go to the job site, or you got to go to the pit. You got to do this. So I think timing is key and timing is everything. But that being said, in relating to what you were saying, having a great wife and a great support system at home is truly what makes the success of everything else. I mean, you have your TV show and your business, but at the end of the day, if you don't have that support back at home, that is your ride or die or with you 100%, it's not working.
Yeah. I'd give you some advice, Taylor, because I've talked to my son. He's an optometrist. He loves business. And so he actually went back after optometry school and he had a business. He got his master's of business. He got an MBA. And him and his friends invite me along a lot of times to discuss where they're at in life, because he has two children and he kind of set his business up. Cause I'm like you, I was the dad that never went to the field trips. I was the dad that didn't bring snacks. I coached all my kids. So I made time to do that. But a lot of him and his friends, along with you, are in that stage in life. Like, I want to have a successful business, but I also want to have good kids and a good family life. It's a balancing act, and nobody's the same. I can't give you a set of rules that work for you and that same set of rules works for my son. But I would encourage you that I've talked to a lot of people that are my age and they get to this point in life. And in fact, if you Fred Hurt, they just did a special on Fred Hurt. And one of his regrets was that he didn't spend enough time at home with his son, because Dustin and him really developed a relationship later in life. I was watching his story, you know, kind of what he was saying, and he never said, I wish I would have worked more. I've got a good friend that's struggling with the same thing. He's got cancer, and I've had some really deep discussions with him. And I've asked him what was important, and he's a very successful man. He's got lots of businesses. He's worth a lot of money. And I've asked him what was important, and he never talked about his businesses. He talked about his daughters. He talked about relationship. So I'd encourage, you know, you, and if there's young people that are starting up a business, you can do it both. I mean, there was times I was so focused on business thinking that if I don't work Saturday, we're going to lose this contract. And in the end, that Saturday that I should have been at my kid's game, if I would have said, hey, Mike, who was my quarry superintendent, I need you there, it would have worked out. You know what I mean? You can't get that day back where your son hit a home run or something and you weren't there. You know, whatever it is, whether it's your daughter at her dance recital and she looks over and there's an empty chair next to your wife, you won't get that back. And it means a lot.
You're almost going to make me cry. You know, what's funny is my daughter had a dance recital 2 weeks ago and I ended up missing it because I was doing work stuff. And when you're saying that, like, I'm a pretty blue collar guy. Don't try to get my emotions too strong. But when you were saying that, I'm like picturing, you know, my daughter looking over at an empty chair. And I do want to say, like, you know, my dad was much like me. I'm a workaholic. My business is, I love what I do.
Taylor, me too.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's hard because when you're growing the business, it's so capital intensive. Your mind's on it. You sit awake at night. You're grinding your teeth. There's so much stress. You're kind of just like wrapped up, and business takes a priority over family. But the overwhelming goal of doing business is for family, to set up succession and to set up all this stuff so that, you know, family, you can send my kids to university and they can get a degree and be an optometrist or a doctor. And we don't have to worry about that stuff. It's interesting hearing you say that because I'm living in that moment right now. But then my father, who is 59 years old, like we talked about at the beginning, I call him old man, and he's upstairs. You could probably hear me say this, and he would agree, but he's a better grandfather than he was a father. My dad gave me an amazing life. Do not get me wrong. And everything's fantastic. And he taught me business. He taught me to be the man that I am today. But he'll leave the office at like 1 or 2. And I'm like, oh, like, where's dad? Then my wife will send me a video of, you know, dad at our house playing with my daughter. And I'm like, oh, okay. That never happened when I was a kid. So it's almost like trying to instill that in my head. And what you're saying now is like, I just don't want to get older and then regret missing stuff.
I would encourage you, Taylor, to hire and train up competent people because you can't do it all. I used to think I could do it all. I used to think to myself, well, I got to be there if he's welding up this crack in a screen, right? Well, you know what? My guys were pretty darn good welders. I didn't need to be there and make sure they preheated this or tightened this bolt. It kind of got done. And the other thing I'd encourage you to, and I tell a lot of people, a lot of dads with daughters, your daughter's going to come home sometime and she's going to go dance with me, daddy. I tell all these young dads, dance with your daughter. Like when she comes home and she's done a dance recital, she's like, daddy, let me show you something. Take the time and dance with her. I know you got phone calls and you've got emails and all that kind of stuff, but man, daughters need their dads. So,
yeah, the dynamic is our carrying forward with family and business. It's pretty incredible. But to kind of shift things a bit, so you bring your wife, you're doing Gold Rush, you're filming the TV show. How do you get to where you are now, where now we have America's Backyard Gold? And here you are doing this now at this point in your life. Like, how did you get from first season of Gold Rush to, you know, and I know you had Dave Turns Lost Mine, but now I have my own TV show and this is what I'm doing.
I think I just don't quit. I don't give up. After Gold Rush, I left kind of bad. If you look on the internet and you just Google Dave Turn, one of the first things you're going to see is an altercation between me and another guy. At that point in my life, I knew I had to get out. It was starting to get toxic. And I got out a little too late. I mean, the way it blew up, I never wanted it to end that way. But I also love finding gold. I love going out prospecting. I love the idea, and I love the people that I met along the way. And so, you know, it was basically about 2 years until I was out prospecting. I never needed a job. I mean, I was always doing something to make money, but I loved going out prospecting and meeting people. And as I was doing it, I kind of hooked up with another guy that had the same passion, but he came from a motion picture or TV producing background. And so we started a YouTube channel that started getting some attention, and it was called The Great American Prospect. You can still see some of our episodes on YouTube, still out there. That got some attention because it really started gaining some momentum. And then I pitched some other shows. I started pitching shows because I kind of liked the idea of doing the TV. And I don't know how to say this, but TV helps me pay for my passion for finding gold. So if I can bring cameras along and get the TV, it helps pay some of those bills. And so I knew that I love chasing gold and finding it and meeting people and doing all that. And so Raw Television came to me and said, hey, would you do another TV show? And so we started working on some ideas. I pitched several ideas. And then the idea of Dave Kern's Lost Mine came along because I was constantly following where dredges went. And I'm trying to figure out how to get gold that they left. And I absolutely loved it. But the problem with Dave Kern's Lost Mine was that we're constantly looking for it. And once we find that place, right, you know, you got to mine it. Well, we did that in Alaska, and then it becomes Gold Rush. I mean, then it's just another spinoff. Whereas before, on the search, the journey, the experience of finding new gold is genuine. You know, when you find a new spot and it's good, you're passionate. And conversely, when you find a spot that you just busted your butt, you were there for 2 or 3 weeks and there's not enough gold, and you're like, all right, guys, pack it up. We got to go. That's real drama. It's not produced. It's not made up. It's real. And so then we're like, all right, guys, pack it up. We're leaving. And I love that part of the journey, the chase. And again, because Dave Kern's Lost Mine kind of boxed us into mining in the same place, and it's the same thing again, the show got canceled. And again, I wasn't done. So I pitched some more shows. I pitched this one, and it was basically about 2 years to get it on TV. And so we just filmed it this summer, and here we are, America's Backyard Gold. So if enough people watch it, we'll probably keep going. If nobody watches it, I'll be spending time with the grandkids, like your dad.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they will. And I'm curious and interested in what you can kind of tell us of, like, what to expect from America's Backyard Gold.
To me, this was what I really wanted to do. I love history. Taylor, I love the history of gold. And I mean, gold is a big part of Canadian history and a big part of America's history. It really is. It got people populated this side of the Rocky Mountains, on the west side of the Rocky Mountains. And for me, it was always fun for me to pit my wisdom and my knowledge, my experience in modern day equipment against where the old timers went. And so I just love that aspect, and I love the people in this industry. So I wanted to put those three passions together, in search of gold, people, and their stories. If we take time to listen to, you know, somebody's story, everybody's got a story and it's interesting. And then number three was the history. So you put those three things together: the history, human interest, and the process of finding gold. That's the show. I could tell you stories about the people, the characters, amazing places we went, all in search of gold.
That's so cool.
Yeah, we go on a journey. It's Friday nights on Discovery Channel. Starts this Friday.
Yeah. No, it's already out when this podcast is out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I am curious, though, because I always like digging, you know, is there anything over the years, I guess, that kind of like stands out to you that wasn't on camera that you were like, shit, like this would have been really good on camera, and it's too bad nobody was here to film this? Is there anything that stands out or comes to your mind? Any kind of event?
for me, it's some of the stories that I've heard. I love people and their stories. So a lot of times that's where a little bit of the conflict, a little bit of the rub between the TV and myself. I'm an executive producer, but I've also got things in my mind that I love hearing. I love the history. I love to hear people's story. I love to hear why. I interviewed 60 people for this show. And on the show, I'm always like, hey, what got you into this? Why are you here? What are you doing? Why are you out here in the stream trying to find gold? And so many of the stories wasn't, oh, I'm trying to make money. I'm trying to pay the bills. It's more of an adventure. It's more of a community. They come, whether it's a family, they bring the family together. So some of the things that I regret are some of the stories. I met a young lady that got out of a bad marriage, and she was kind of hiding out, but she had three young kids, and she met some miners that taught them how to get gold out of the stream. And so the gold served two purposes. It brought the family together for a purpose and a job. And number two, the gold helped pay some of the bills. And then we meet them 10 years later, and they're doing well, and they still love as a family to kind of go out and find gold. You know, in stories like that, there was another story of a guy that was, as a young man, he grew up in a wealthy family, but he got into a lot of trouble. He was drugs, gangs, and later in life, he discovered gold. But there's a true thing when you talk about gold fever. It can be addictive. When you see that gold, you want to find more. So this guy, now he brings kids out of the inner cities that are, you know, into drugs and guns and violence, and he brings them out prospecting. They find gold. It's kind of changing one addiction to another, but this is a healthy addiction because you're finding gold, you're working hard, you know, you're out in the beautiful outdoors in the environment, and it's a different way of life. And I wish I could have, on the show, spent more time telling those stories because I love those kind of stories. But there's only so much time in a 1 hour segment. And a lot of times we didn't get to see those or tell those stories.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that the hour long segments are like just the best of the best. And that's what's so exciting about it. I love the fact of the story because I'm the same. For instance, I'll refer back to our sand pit. You know, it started back in the 50s and 60s. Essentially, you know, they dredged it all out and they got all the sand, you know, that they thought. And then there's a stockpile left. This company came to us like, hey, you guys want it? Whatever. We got the gradations done. It ends up meeting the spec of this really expensive sand we use. Then we're looking at the map of the extraction limits. And I'm like, okay, well, this area was done in the 70s. Why'd you guys leave this 15 acre chunk? And they're like, oh, interesting. Yeah, we left that. Let's send our surveyors out and see if you can actually extract the sand from there. So they go out there, they end up sending us approvals. You find like there's old like equipment and stuff in the bush now. And now here we are going back to where they were in the 70s or 80s and kind of missed this chunk. And we're reclaiming this 15 acres and getting this sand out. And, you know, maybe it's a little bit lower here or maybe it's a little bit higher here. And it's like just the story and the history, I think, of the pit and how you can drive further and further back into the land. And just kind of imagine what it was when they first started in the 50s, you know, and the 60s. It's like, so like sharing the stories is something that I think is super, super interesting as well, too. But when I talk about some of the old equipment and stuff that we've found, that to me is also really interesting. I like seeing the progression of the equipment that they've used for whether it be gold mining or mining over the years, right? I mean, you got steam excavators and cable excavators, all this stuff. Is there anything that stands out to you that you like? When in doubt, I mean, if you're like, I got to operate a piece of machinery, this is my favorite piece of machinery. Is there any type of equipment that stands out to you that you're like, that's the coolest thing. This is what I love. This is neat.
To me, it's like, I got a lot of respect for, I've seen a lot of old equipment in the brush and I'll always go look at it. And if you sit in some of those seats, like I see a lot of drag lines because, you know, the drag line after the big dredges and stuff, the drag line was a pretty effective piece of equipment. But you sit in this seat that you might as well sit on a box, you know, a wood box. And the levers, man, there's like levers all over the place. And so I would sit and go, man, these guys had to have been talented. You know, we'll sit in an excavator. We've got all the windows. We got a radio. We've got air conditioning and heat. Yeah. And a nice air right seat, even the dozers that we've got nowadays, you know, the first dozer we had was an old D8.
Was it open cab? Open cab. D8?
Yeah.
Open cab with a pony start motor.
No, yes.
So, yeah, it was like, it was in the 60s. It was like a 1966 or something.
Oh, cool.
But, you know, just sitting in those things and how much work it was. And now I just, I sit at times, well, I can just go brain dead and run a dozer or run an excavator and be efficient at it. And I can sit there and think about the world. A lot of times the guys would be like, we're mining away, and camera crew would be like, hey, where's Dave? And they would say, he's in therapy. They'd go, what do you mean he's in therapy? Well, he turned the radio off and he's running the dozer up there and nobody can bother me. Because we had a rule that you don't approach the equipment unless somebody acknowledges you, you know, then you can walk up to the equipment. So that was my therapy. I'd just jump in a machine and just run it, turn the radio off.
Yeah, they end up getting 4.5 hours of the GoPro footage from the cab of just silence and you just sitting there. Yeah. That's how it ends up being with us too. Like, we do YouTube and stuff as well too. And it'll just be like, even in a dump truck, if I'm going down the road, like sometimes it's just silent and I'm just like, you just get lost in your own thoughts, and it's kind of nice to sit there. Are you guys using any technology on these mines, like during the course of Gold Rush and stuff, as far as like GPS technology? Are you guys genuinely like, all right, there's stakes in the ground, this is where the area we're taking, get down to the pay dirt and get it out? I've always wondered that. Are you guys, I never saw like GPS technology on, or like, you know, a Trimble or Topcon or a system on the site.
I've never used it.
Wow.
Partly because we've used LIDAR. We've used ground penetrating radar.
For prospecting?
For prospecting. But it also has limits for mining. I mean, it's not like we're cutting to any grade. You know what I mean? We're not doing a cut and fill. All we're doing is mass excavation. And when we get to that level, so now we know through drill logs, through GPR, ground penetrating radar, LIDAR, we know what levels we got to get to. So then it's just, what is the best way to mass excavate to get to that level where the gold lives? And then at that point, you know, then it's just moving the amount and trying to keep up with what the plant can provide. You know, we don't have to hit a grade. If we don't have to have that fill that we're making or the stockpile of waste, you know, that we're going to reclaim with, it's just building a pile. But there's a lot of engineering in front, because at least myself, whenever I came out to a new piece of ground, one of the first thoughts is, how am I going to reclaim it?
Yes.
You know, just mass excavating, getting the dirt out of the way. I think anybody can do that. But how do you move the dirt, keep the topsoil alive, keep it fresh? Because that's the last thing. And that's what's got all the living organisms in it. And how do you protect that? Because what you don't want to do is just roll the topsoil over and then you pile and you leave it there for a couple of years and then you're done. Well, you're killing everything. There's no oxygen. You got to kind of treat that topsoil. So yeah, there's a lot of planning. I mean, people think you just go in and mine it and rip it out and destroy, but there's a lot of thought that goes in. If you're a responsible miner, the first thing you think of is, how am I going to reclaim it? What do I do with the topsoil? A lot of times people don't realize that there is a lot of thought.
Yeah, no, 100%. A big thing over at the pit that we're at is, you know, pit rehab, you know, the rehabilitation of the land once we dig it out. And that's why if we're taking out trees, we're cutting down the trees, we're selling them for firewood and stuff, but all the stumps actually and organic matter remain on site. And because there's a water level, what we do with the stumps is they get piled in on a 3-to-1 slope, and that's what we build our slope with. And then we lay stumps out in the middle of the ponds for, you know, turtles and habitats in order to reclaim all that. So that's a huge part of it. And that kind of ties into my next question is, I've always wondered, here in Ottawa, getting a pit license or a quarry license, super insane, you know, with the Ministry of Environment, the Ministry of Labor, or just basically the MOE, the Ministry of Environment. What's it like with gold mining? Like when you're in Alaska and you're like, all right, are these already old claims that have we call it mineral extraction zoning? Is there zoning regulations up there? Or is it just like, can you buy a piece of land and be like, I think there's gold here, I'm going to take it? Or is there years, like you were saying, of preparation, of engineering to change the zoning to mineral extraction okay, now you have a Class A license, so you can take 200,000 ton from this ground. Is there limits? I'm interested in that part of it.
Oh, yeah. Alaska has joined that era. I think 50 years ago, it wasn't as difficult, but now they've come around. They've got all of those same Department of Natural Resources, you know, the mining and reclamation, the water, the environmental, all that. They have all of that. You can go stake claim. So if you do find gold, or if you think there's potential, and they allow you, you know, you can go and get like an interest in prospecting permit. And then once you say, okay, well, there is gold here, then you stake the claims. And then from there, now you've got to do your environmental assessment. You've got to do all of that. So yeah, every state. Now I will say Alaska is miner friendly. You can call the people in those offices and they're helpful because they realize that a lot of Alaska's income comes from natural resources. I can't say that for all the states. There's some states that do not want mining, period. What's amazing in America is that those laws, mining laws, they wanted people to, you know, 150 years ago, they wanted mining because that was income to the government. It moved people around. It got people populating. And so those mining laws kind of supersede the new laws. And so there's always that constant battle and friction between the mining law of 1878 or something. And now all the environmental laws came in the, you know, the late 70s, early 80s. It's getting harder and harder and harder to mine. You understand that. It's getting tough.
There's a lot of red tape in the way. And that's why for us to go, like, I know where there's still a lot of sand, but I would be millions of dollars and years down the road in order to just get that license to a Class A pit license where I can go and change it to mineral extraction and extract aggregate from the ground and sell it to market. Is there still a way, you think, for someone, let's say I was like, hey, you know what? I'm going to go do this gold thing. Is there still like the American dream of going and making money gold mining and going and doing that from nothing? Could you do that?
Yes, you can. I wouldn't recommend it. I'll be straight up honest with you. It's such an education.
A lot of capital.
Yeah, a lot of capital. And I'm going to be straight up honest with you. I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years and I know of two successful gold miners that are on a smaller scale. I'm not talking about Newmont, Barrick, and, you know, the big dogs out there. I'm talking about medium-sized companies like yours and our company that can go out and still do it. And I know of two that are successful, but they've been doing it a long time and they found a good piece of ground. The whole issue is finding a piece of ground, whether it's permitted already or, you know, to get the permits, you've got to have a lot of money to get the permits anymore, but there's still gold out there to be found. This show is more about going out on a weekend, going out on a family vacation and finding gold that's still out there. I think it's easier on a small scale, on a prospector scale, you know, on a scale where you're going out with not big, huge pieces of equipment, but you're going out with a pan and a shovel and maybe a high banker. That's what this show is about. And that is still doable. There's still a lot of states that will let you go out with a pan or a high banker and a shovel, very minimal impact on the environment. Because to me, it's similar to like fishing. You know, when we go fishing, you are pulling a natural resource out of the water. Well, when you're going gold mining, if you do it the right way and you're doing it on a smaller scale, you can get the gold. It's going to help pay some of the bills, you know, whatever gas bill or lunch or whatever. But you're out there in the beautiful outdoor and it's physical work. So it helps you stay in shape. You know, it can be a family thing. It can be a community thing. And that's what I found was a lot of people out there doing it. They're having a great time. And gold fever is pretty real. People get really passionate about it. And so it's kind of fun.
I'm excited to see all that on the show. And like, I guess that kind of, yeah, like goes into that question of like, is it still possible? And I think what's interesting about maybe the stories that you're sharing on America's Backyard Gold is that you share these stories of, you know, prospecting and people going out there and doing it, achieving their goals, which, hey, listen, I'm super excited to watch that show. And I'm also very excited. Hopefully you're going to be at Con Expo in 2026 and we can sit down and maybe have a beer or a water or whatever, whatever your interests are.
You got any good beer in Canada?
Do we have beer? We got beer that'll put Americans on their bum. I have a keg in my office, actually.
Well, we minded it, you know, Yukon territory for, gosh, I was up there 7 years. So I know I love Canada. I thought the people were great. And that's one of the things I love about this business is, you know, whether you're Canadian, Australian, New Zealand, American, whatever, even in South America, when you're digging up the ground, all the difficulties of turning that ground over, there's a certain camaraderie. You know, we've done the same things. We faced adversity. Mother Nature, the earth doesn't give up easily. It's hard work. And there's such a, I love the people. And that comes out in this show is I love people. I love to hear their stories. And that's one of the reasons I love ConAg Con Expo is I get to talk to people over a beer and, hey, what's going on? What are you facing? And the other thing too, is I want to recommend young guys use us, the old men. We've been through some of this. It took me a while to learn that, to humble myself. And, you know, when I was 20 or 30, I had to humble myself. I started to figure out I didn't know it all, but I had to humble myself and reach out to guys that were older than me and that had done it and say, hey, help me out here. And, you know, if you do that out of respect to somebody, these older guys that are retiring will be like, sure, I'll help you. What are you looking for? What do you need? Well, I did it this way. Maybe you can do it this way. And if we bring in the older guys in and helping the younger guys learn some of those ropes, you know, you won't have some of the mistakes that I made. So I would encourage, you know, that a lot of the young people are going to watch this. Reach out to some of the guys, whether they're retired or sitting at home, say, hey, look, I've never dealt with permafrost or I've never dealt with 5 feet of frost. How do I get it out of here? What should I do? Or whether it's, you know, mud or, you know, whatever it is, there's guys out there that have done it. So that's one thing I had to learn is to humble myself and ask questions.
Yeah. Well, and that's what stuff like you said, like Con Expo, Con Egg, and like going to shows like that and actually just walking up to somebody and asking them a question, you know, not just necessarily a question that maybe they've been asked a million times, although I'm sure they wouldn't mind answering it, but just asking the questions you really want the answers for. I always say, you know, I judge a man by the questions that he asks, not by the answers that he gives. To me, I've always lived like that. I've always tried to just ask as many questions. And sometimes we'll leave a meeting and, you know, people be like, you're asking the guy a lot of stuff. I'm like, I just want to get in his head and I just want to like understand how he functions and how he or she works. So that's why I like Con Expo Con Egg. And that's why I'm pumped to see you there. I am also pumped to see America's Backyard Gold, which is out now and everybody should go and watch that. But yeah, man, David, Dave, I'm super happy to have you on here today. Thank you for coming on. I'm super pumped for what you have and I'm excited to see what comes in the future.
I enjoyed it. I love talking to young guys that are out there doing it. So thanks, Taylor. Appreciate it, man. I guarantee we'll go have a beer one of these days.
Oh, for sure we will. For sure. Okay, thank you, everybody. This podcast was brought to you by our good friends over at Komatsu. Thank you for watching. We'll catch you guys on the next one. Take care.